Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like comparative religion, law, anthropology, and media criticism. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
We're joined by Hillary Cleary, an interactive designer at IDEUM, who works with her team in Corrales to create, develop, and manufacture multi-touch, immersive, and interactive exhibits for museums across the country. Recent projects can be seen at the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum, the World War II Museum, and the National Cowgirl Hall of Fame. We're also joined by Ethan Ortega, instructional coordinator for the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs Historic Sites Division, who worked with students at New Mexico Highlands University to reimagine the exhibits at the Jemez Historic Site Visitor Center, which opened to the public May 18th, 2019. In this segment, we're going to talk about the tools and best practices for this kind of work, designing immersive experiences and exhibits. You both are doing this kind of work, presumably with teams of people. I don't think you both are working by yourselves in tiny little rooms. Give me an idea of what these teams look like and how you go about actually making the decisions.
For IDEUM, the process really depends on the client and the size of the project, but typically we will have a team of 3 to 5 people working on any given project. And like I said, it really depends on the scale, but that would be like a standard project. And that's composed of a project coordinator or producer whose role is essentially to interface with the client or curator and to keep our team on track, manage hours, manage budget, sort of the glue that holds everything together. And then there's a designer, which is myself. So I'm in charge predominantly of visually how the application is going to look and also how the application is going to function. So we go through several stages of design in our projects, regardless of what the project is. We'll start with a wireframing or prototyping phase where really early on we're having conversations with the client, just rudimentary pencil and paper. Where do these things go? How is this going to be put together? And then translate that into a design document. So mocking it up digitally in tools like Adobe Sketch or other prototyping software like InVision Studio. And then finally, I'll take that into a final design phase. And then we also have developers on the team. And the developer is in charge of implementing the project that I've designed visually. So there's a lot of back and forth between designers and developers at IDEUM, and we talk about animations, how translating what I do in terms of working in Photoshop or these other programs, it's not always how things are going to look ultimately, because the programmers are taking this and putting it into other programs and developing it and writing code. So there's a lot of interplay between all of us. And yeah, I mean, a typical project could last anywhere from 2 to 9 months, I would say, on our end.
Now, you said that you've got clients, though.
We do have clients, yes. So, and that's also a part of the process is meeting with them. So, for example, on the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum project that I was fortunate enough to work on, we had weekly meetings with one of the head curators of that museum, and she would sort of be my guide in terms of content, what visually things should look like to match up with the Smithsonian's design aesthetic and sensibilities and other exhibits. So we work really closely with our clients.
So is that the place where sort of the big idea comes into play with the mission of the project? I don't know if that's the word.
Yeah,
for it,
yeah, hopefully. I think it's sometimes we get stuck in the weeds, you know. Every client is different, and there's some where it can get real nitpicky and they focus on some small aspect of design or whatnot, but overall, we have a couple really big meetings in the beginning, which are like brainstorming sessions. We establish all these things, create style guides, have these initial conversations, and then we follow through with those. And then throughout the process, there's still a feedback between the client and us on our side.
Ethan, for you, there's some parts that are probably similar, but some parts I'm thinking that are different, because in a way you only have one client, which is the citizens of New Mexico, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you could look at it that way. What we do is for them and our visitors as well that come from out of state or internationally. But really, we're usually the client in this process. And so as part of the Museum of New Mexico system, we actually have a resource called the Museum Resources Division. And so that's full of preparators and designers. And so we can go that route where we use our own internal resources. They definitely set our branding style and that kind of look that we use. But our favorite projects are when we're working with students and when we're working with the community. And so we've created a really great relationship with New Mexico Highlands University's media arts team. And for the last two big museum exhibit renovations that we've done, we've worked with them. They have a program called the Program for Interactive Cultural Technologies. And basically, they're taking whatever is emergent, whatever is becoming easily accessible, and they're applying these technologies to interpretation. And we usually will set this up maybe a year in advance. And usually, we don't have to do too much persuading because they're starting to really like to work with New Mexico Historic Sites. But we'll work with, you know, maybe 16 to 20 different students, and they all have a varied set of skills. And so out of the students, we'll actually identify a project manager, and then we usually break them up into three different groups. One will be a design group, one will be a digital media group, and then another will be a multimedia group. And so they'll come up with projects, and we'll have various meetings. And before we do any kind of exhibit work, we do consultation, both formally and informally, with our cultural stakeholders as well.
You're like the producer.
Maybe more like the hype man. But no, I'm a coordinator.
And then you're using the program at Highlands to do the design and development work.
Mm-hmm.
And so the students there, these are all college students then?
Yeah, undergrad and graduate students.
And so they're doing this partly for course credit? Do they get paid out of curiosity?
So they kind of get both. So
cool.
When they're traveling out to the sites, they get stipends and per diem and all that. But this is really the only course that these students took this semester. So they're able to really dive in and put like 100% of them into it. And they're fantastic. We absolutely love working with them, and the things that they come up with is just incredible.
You both talked a little bit about the process. You, Ethan, you've talked about how you've got a lot of exhibits that are a little more tactile, or you can build things or be in the volcano bathroom. But at what point do those decisions actually get made, and how do you decide?
It's a really challenging process for us, actually, because every project is different. Because we work all over the country, sometimes a museum like the Smithsonian will send out an RFP, which is a request for proposal, and they have very specific ideas, right, about what they want. You know, we want to redesign this exhibit. We already have all the media. We know what we want. And then sometimes we'll get something that's super open-ended, and it's a free-for-all, pie in the sky, whatever you want. So really, it's a process of wherever we are at the beginning, having those feedback and conversation sessions to get us to a place that's a very specific idea. So one example, we've been working with the San Diego Zoo on a set of proposals for projects that they're redesigning, and that process was pretty iterative and collaborative, and then we actually got to a place where we had specific ideas about exhibits. We drew out concept drawings of what those exhibits would look like. We had mood imagery, which is photos sort of depicting different elements of the vibe, I guess I would call it, of what the exhibit is going to be like, and then also written text, an experience narrative is what we call it. So once we get all of those elements together, that's sort of the cohesive group of things that we need in order to start in the design phase.
So it's really a combination of a lot of things, and really for something to make the final cut, it's got to be funded. So, you know, as an institution that has a pretty limited and finite budget, we pull from lots of different sources. And so if I get somebody that's really interested in something, and my director's like, yes, that's cool, I'll find the money to pay for that. Or, you know, one of our many support groups, we have several nonprofit organizations that support our historic sites. We usually persuade them by doing virtual prototyping. So we may, you know, mock up the space virtually and then allow them to look around in it and kind of get a feeling. And we found that almost like 100% of the time when we do that, they'll commit to funding whatever project because they can see it, you know, they can experience it. And then really everything needs to make it through our cultural stakeholders. And that's really the final cut for anything that we do, because, you know, it's not just our history. It's everyone's history. And like for places like Coronado Historic Site and Jemez Historic Site, it's ancestral lands to several other groups. So we want to make sure that everybody is on board.
Are there stable platforms for development at this point? I mean, are there established frameworks and platforms for doing this kind of work at this point, or is it still Wild West?
Well, yeah, so we're mainly in the business of using things that are already developed. We do a little bit of like software and code development for different projects, but usually that's for limiting the device that we're using,
right,
so that visitors can't escape our programming. there's definitely stuff out there. And the cool thing about like this time in emergent technology is that there's so many programs out there that you don't have to know coding to be able to do things like projection mapping and creating interactive touchscreens. So it makes it much more accessible to the average museum employee.
And I would say for us, we have an understanding, I think, between the developers and designers and everyone at IDM that it does still feel like the Wild West and things are changing at a really rapid rate, but we have things that we're using consistently on our day-to-day, right? Most of the developers who create our programs are developing in a program called Unity, which is a game engine software, or Qt Quick, which is another development space. And those are kind of our standards right now. But I think that there's an understanding that as technology changes, we will need to adapt, and nothing is permanent in this field.
Back when I was in the business of creating this for other people, people would always say, well, so how much is it going to cost, and who's going to pay for it over time? You know, what's the sustainability of this project? So, you know, let's say you put in this enormous, amazing, immersive exhibit at the Cowgirl Hall of Fame. How do they update it? How do they change it? When the firmware updates come through, who does that?
It totally depends on the project. So sometimes the project we did for the Smithsonian, the client will actually pay for a CMS, content management system, so that they have the ability to change their content over time. And we also did that for a natural history museum in Michigan. They have collection items essentially that are hooked up to one of our tables with RFID tags. So it's a scannable object and the computer will recognize it. We developed the program so they would have the ability in the future to change all of the collection items. So, you know, say they got a new really exciting fossil and they wanted to add to the collection, it's really easy for them to do that. So sometimes we will build that into the application. And our hope is that, you know, we create these experiences, and although they are digital and definitely have a shelf life, that they will last probably, I would say, at least 5 to 10 years is our kind of standard for clients.
A lot of the programs that we use, because like I said, we are on a limited budget, are, you know, freeware. And so there are some really great programs out there like Touch Designer.
We use that sometimes.
Yeah, Touch Designer, it was initially designed to do like music shows, right? And, you know, control a bunch of lights and screens and all these things, but you can do projection mapping on it. You can do touch screen interfaces. You can control lots of different like lighting objects through it. And so that's something that we play with a lot. And another thing is Blender. So when we do 3D modeling, we use Blender. And I believe for us, it might be a little different than you guys, since we're, you know, seen as like a nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
Unity can be available to us with no fee.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's very expensive. The licenses that we have are limited. So I've used Unity in work that I've done for IDM, but it's always sort of a juggling act of, okay, who's, you know, what programmer isn't using the license right now? So you can, because they are very vicious about, you know, maintaining that we have licenses.
Ethan, what about you? Can you speak to the revision cycle and the longevity and shelf life of the new interactive and digital exhibits that you're creating?
So, you know, in general museum practice, 5 to 10 years really is the max for an exhibit before it should be rethought. Now, Historic Sites hasn't always practiced that. Like I said, we've been updating exhibits from the late 70s and early 80s in most cases. But really, yeah, if it's older than 5 to 10 years, like, it needs to be reimagined anyways.
So the sort of dynamic updating isn't as much a concern in that context. And 5 years, to me, that seems short. Maybe that's just given what I've seen at some of the museums and some of the historic sites in New Mexico.
That's part of it. So, you know, part of that kind of like time frame is set because of content changes. But the other part is just the physical wear and tear of these exhibits. And, you know, if something is, you know, destroyed by 5 years, and you're going to reprint it, why not, you know,
then reinterpret it. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I also think it, you know, 5 to 10 years to me seems like an opportunity for the way that we think about history and exhibits to update and change. History isn't something that's constant. It's not one voice. It's not one story. So, you know, when we bring in new exhibits, we also bring in new voices to the conversation, which is critical to telling people's stories in accurate and diverse ways.
We've, you know, said throughout all of these that, you know, this digital media allows us to be more dynamic in how we interpret. And you're asking about the longevity of these things. Well, I'm sure that you guys have had a TV that has lasted more than 5 or 10 years, right? So, you know, as we transition out of, you know, static print signs and print information panels to digital monitors and digital displays, I have some hope that we'll be able to, you know, to continue using those for at least a decade. Yeah.
For more information about Jemez Historic Site, you can visit nmhistoricsites.org/Jemez. For more information about IDEUM, you can visit IDEUM.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, string bassist and loopmeister extraordinaire.